I'm trying to get a fix on how to identify you, the creator, the coordinator, the editor.
I'm one of the co-directors, and it was my baby at the start. I mean, it was my idea.
Well, this is certainly not the first day in the life of, so let's go back and tell me how the first day in the life of came about and what you did.
I used to be a photographer in a former incarnation, and I was working for Time Magazine and National Geographic in Australia about 10 years ago. And fell in love with us, with the country, and just thought it was one of the most interesting places I'd ever been. It reminded me sort of what I thought America was, say, 40 or 50 years ago. Wide open spaces. It's the land of opportunity. It seemed like anybody who went down there was willing to work hard could do very well. And it seemed like every time I came back to the United States or traveled anywhere else in the world, every other photographer I met would ask me what it was like to live in Australia. Could they get work there? What were the girls like? Not necessarily in that order. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to figure out a way of getting the world's best photographers to all work together on a project? Most photographers I know tend to be somewhat frustrated by the way their photographs are used. I think, you know, each of us as photographers want a little portfolio every week in Time or Newsweek, and in fact, that's not the purpose of Time or Newsweek. So I thought, wouldn't it be nice to do a project where the purpose was to give the photographer sort of a showcase? In 1974, Life magazine did a special issue, which is called A Day in Life of America. They had 100 American photographers, who none of whom met each other, who all worked separately on that day and mailed their film in. And I was the baby of the group. I was 22, and I was just sort of, I just graduated from college, and I managed to meet John Lowengard, who was the picture editor of Life. And I think he felt sorry for me and gave me a chance to be part of this sort of elite crew. So here I was, you know, a couple of years later in Australia, and I was now working for other magazines, and I sort of took the Life idea and thought maybe there would be a way of expanding it so it would be an international project, which would sort of take the world's best photographers, not just photographers from the country where the book was being done, and bring them all together and sort of make them into a team, give them a few days to meet each other and hang out and to complain to each other and show each other their pictures and then send them out all over the country with the understanding that nobody was guaranteed a picture in the book. If it didn't work, if they had a bad day or whatever, they'd be left out of the book. So it was a kind of a weird combination of a competition and a collaboration, you know, all mixed together. So that's how this all got started.
And that was a day in the life of Australia.
It was 1981. It feels like a lot longer than 5 years ago.
And that was a very successful book, wasn't it?
It was.
In Australia?
In Australia, yeah. It was pretty successful here in the United States, too. I think it sold around 20,000 copies, which is pretty substantial for a picture book. You know, when I first came up with the idea, I went to publishers in Australia with a group of friends, and we had sort of decided we were going to do this together. And we started in 1979, and for 2 years, everybody we spoke to turned us down. 35 publishers said this would never work. They said it was too expensive. A project to bring 100 photographers to a country like Australia would cost you $1 million, and no publisher in his right mind would spend that much before you even started printing the books. And they also said they didn't think these famous photographers would take off time from their normal, you know, jobs at Time and Life and Newsweek and National Geographic. They wouldn't give up their normal jobs to all come to Australia for a week. And they said they thought that the idea was kind of gimmicky, that you couldn't really say anything very interesting or significant about a country in just one day. And most importantly for them, they said that the public would never buy the book. It was just, you know, the idea was too absurd.
Well, they're the experts. They should know.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, what do you do? Like, everybody who knew what they were talking about said this is not going to work, and all of us who were photographers were obsessed with this idea, so we borrowed money from our friends and our family. And then I was photographing the Prime Minister of Australia one day for a Time cover, and we just started talking, and I explained that I was trying to do this book about his country and how much trouble I'd been having. And he said, why don't you go to the airlines, and you know, they always has a couple of seats empty on each of their flights, maybe they would trade you the seats for some of your books when they came out. It was such an obvious idea when he pointed it out. So that's how we finally did it. We went to rental car companies, hotels, airlines, film, you know, Kodak, and we said, would you donate whatever your company manufactures to the project? And when the book comes out, we'll give you X number of copies back. And that's sort of become, that's the way we funded all of our projects up to now. So it's very different than how most books are done.
That's a wonderful idea. Trade deal.
Yeah, it's sort of bartering. And what's interesting about it is in the America book, you know, Kodak and Merrill Lynch and United Airlines, Apple, Hertz, and Nikon were the sponsors. But none of them have any control over what goes in the book. They have no editorial control at all, no censorship. So they don't even see the books till it comes out.
You didn't work in a shot of an Apple computer somewhere?
Nope. what we said to these people is, look, these are journalists, and the moment that anyone thinks that this is a self-serving promotion of some kind, the book will lose all of its appeal. So you either have to trust us or you shouldn't be a sponsor. And I guess now that the Day in Life of America book is the fifth in the series, people know that the other books have been pretty successful, and I think that they're pretty high quality and they're interesting, and I don't think they've embarrassed anyone. But the book is a real look at America. It's not just, you know, pretty pictures and scenery and lakes and happy, smiling children. There's some of that in there, but there's also a picture of a mugging, and there's a Ku Klux Klan meeting down in the South. And I mean, there are some things in there that make you feel like this is a pretty even-handed look at the good and the bad of America.
Well, you've had your imitators, too. It seems to me a year or so ago there was a picture book called A Day in the Life of Israel, which was not yours, was it?
No, actually, we asked them to change the name here. It was being distributed by somebody who had been a former distributor of ours, and we objected to them taking advantage of someone who they'd had a business relationship with. In fact, there's no really new ideas under the sun. I mean, before Life magazine did it in 1974, Charles Kuralt did A Day in the Life of America, The Day That Man Walked on the Moon. CBS had 50 film crews all over the United States photographing typical Americans at the same time as the astronauts were on the moon. And before that, the Chinese did it in the 40s and the Russians did it in the 30s. So the idea of trying to capture a day, whether it's in words or videotape or film or stills, is probably not the world's most original idea. I think maybe the only thing we've added to it is getting all these people together. And, you know, in some ways, the book is almost like a byproduct of this crazy event where all these very high, very talented and incredibly egotistical human beings all pool their talent to work together on something. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, people have a lot of fun working on this.
Well, that was my next question. Now that you decided to bring your talents to America and photograph America in a single day, how did you organize it? How many people were involved in this project?
There were about 500 people working on it at different stages. It's the analogy, the best analogy you can make to what we do is a little bit like film production, you know, feature film production. We have a group of people who do the fundraising. Then when they've raised the money, then we go and we usually open up an office someplace where none of us can be reached by our relatives, because this tends to be a very high-pressure, demanding job for a few weeks. And what you want to do is remove yourself from your day-to-day life. So we all moved to Denver. Most of us are from New York, most of the people that worked on the project. Then in Denver, we hired 13 assignment editors and flew them around the United States. And each one of them was responsible for setting up all the arrangements for a group of photographers, say 20 photographers. There were 200 altogether in this project. So these assignment editors would find a family for the photographer to stay with, would line up an assignment, several things to do on that one day. We shot on May 2nd, a Friday. We always shoot on a Friday because I think what we wanted to do is try to capture a normal, typical working day combined with people beginning to relax for the weekend. And then you do all this work. You set up all these arrangements. You find families for the photographers, give them assignments, and when they get out there, they usually ignore everything we ask them to shoot and find something hopefully better.
Well, this surprises me. It is a controlled project. Somehow it was in my mind that the photographers just went out arbitrarily and shot.
No, because I think that there's a danger in that is that you end up with a lot of street photography. And we really wanted to try to make sure that we had... There are some things you've got to line up months in advance. I mean, getting up to the military bases for photographers to photograph, you know, fighter planes, fighter jets, it's something you couldn't just walk up one day, knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm a photographer. Can I come on the base?" We had a photographer. We wanted to photograph the White House that day. And President Reagan was going to be overseas, and we thought it would be interesting to do a story on sort of behind the scenes, what happens at the White House when the president's away. So there was a lot of prearrangement. It was almost 3 months of work.
And what did you do on that day?
Well, I have a particular fascination with computers, Apple computers in particular, and not they're a sponsor because I'm fascinated by them, not the other way around. Steve Jobs, one of the two fellows that started Apple Computers, I guess I identify with him because I think that our beginnings of starting the Day in the Life projects were about as rough as theirs starting in a garage. So I met this fellow a couple of times, and I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to spend part of a day with him? So he started a new company called Next, which is going to be his third attempt at changing the world. I think he's done pretty well in the first two with the Apple II and the Macintosh. Anyway, I spent half the day with him, and then I went and spent half the day with John Sculley, who's the present president of Apple Computers and managing director. And it was very interesting just to see the two different styles of working. Unfortunately, I did not get any pictures in the book from those two situations.
But you took your camera.
Oh, yeah, I took a lot of pictures. But basically, people sitting around in offices are not the kind of pictures we wanted for our books. I guess I was using the project as a way to meet some people I probably wouldn't have the opportunity to spend time with otherwise.
Well, somehow I pictured you as being in a control room biting your fingernails on that day.
No, actually, that's sort of the calm in the eye of the storm. I mean, there's nothing you can do at that point that's going to change the project. By the time the shoot day comes, the photographer's already been out 2 or 3 days. We fly them out like 3 days before the day of the shoot so they can do research and see if we did a good job, if the things that we wanted them to photograph are really worth spending their time on. And I like to shoot because it's very, nobody asks me any questions. I mean, you can imagine what the days leading up to this are like. Every photographer wants to change their flight or their roommate or their assignment at least 9 times. And there's, you know, it's like somebody, you know, those batting machines that throw the baseballs at you. It's like one of those machines that's gone, you know, amok. And every 10 seconds, somebody's about to hit you with a baseball and you're just trying to fend off these things that are coming at you. So the day of shooting is actually a lot of fun.
Well, that fateful day ended, but actually the project, in a way, was just beginning for you, wasn't it? What happened
next? Well, as I said, the whole thing is modular. So here, first we had the fundraisers, then we had the assignment editors, then the photographers arrived. One of the things we did is we gave out Kodak cameras to small school children all over Denver, and each of our famous photographers taught one small, you know, a kid from 5 to 11 years old how to use the camera. Then the photographers went out, took their pictures, and they handed us over 250,000 photographs that were just shot in that one day, and then they all left. At the same time as they were leaving, we brought in a team of picture editors representing Newsweek and Time and National Geographic and the London Sunday Times and Stern, I mean, magazines all over the world, and they spent the next 10 days sorting through all those photographs.
Now, the photographers just left you their roles.
Yeah, they never even saw their film, which is pretty amazing. I mean, that's the way it works, actually, when you work for most of these magazines, is usually you're over in Afghanistan and you ship your film back and pray that it doesn't get x-rayed or hijacked on the way. So the editors went through, and each photographer shot, say, on the average, 3,000 photographs. The editors would go through those pictures and pick out the 50 best photographs, and then every night they would project the work of the photographer who they had edited, and then we'd all vote, and a picture had to get 9 votes to stay in the running. So after 10 days, we narrowed it down to about 1,000 pictures. And then my sister Leslie is the designer of this whole book series. She runs a design firm in New York. And she was the one that really kind of turns this into a book. You know, we sort of dump 1,000 slides on her desk, and we're all burnt out after 5 months of, you know, 18-hour days, and we sort of collapse on the floor in a heap and say, here, Leslie, you know, it's all yours. And then she sort of spends 2 weeks and tries to take a lot of photographs whose the only thing they have in common is that they were shot on one day. And she tries to build a book out of it.
Well, it's more than just taking pictures of a nation in a single day there. I didn't realize there were so many other elements to it, like teaching a kid in Denver how to take a picture.
Well, that's what I mean. It's kind of more of an event or a happening that's kind of an out-of-date word than it is just a book. The book is like the result of something else. We also made a movie. There's a one-hour movie that's going to be on television.
The making of a day,
yes,
in the life.
There was a wonderful thing on 2020 last week, just showing
that. As I recall, I unfortunately, I slipped my mind. Yeah. I meant to buy a copy, but you had a good spread in Newsweek.
They did 40 pages last week.
Yeah, gee, I should have gotten a copy.
It was
that.
The largest color section I think they've done on anything except the Olympics.
So they took shots out of the book.
Yeah. And poor Karen Malarkey, who was the picture of Newsweek, had to then, from the 250 pictures in the book, she had edited down to, you know, 25 pictures, which is even more painful. That's the thing that really hurts so much, is here are all these men and women who have really put their hearts into something. And it is, whether we like it or not, and we certainly never set it up to be this way, but it is a kind of a prestigious thing to be selected as one of the photographers. To go through all that and then not have your pictures end up in the book is kind of painful. And it's painful for me because I'm a photographer. And I know what it feels like when you get your hopes up and you think you did a good job, and then for some reason, you know, I remember doing a story once. I spent a month in Taiwan shooting a cover story for Time magazine, and the Pope was shot the week that the story was supposed to run, and they never ran it. I mean, here we'd spent a month, probably, you know, $10,000 on expenses and film and processing and hotels, and you know, it was old news 3 weeks later. The story was no longer relevant. So out of the 200 photographers that worked on this book, 70 did not get anything in it at all.
Including yourself?
I got one picture, and I was in a helicopter in the early morning at dawn, and I had a picture of some traffic coming across the bridge. So I did get one picture in. But I'm not overly proud of it. I like people pictures.
Cupertino?
It was actually over the Bay Area. I mean, it was near Cupertino, but it was the Bay Bridge coming into San Francisco.
Well, I can't believe you have this huge book here, not one picture of Steve Jobs. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure Steve does not too happy about that either. I didn't think my pictures were that great, and the editors obviously didn't either. It's a little hard for me to be objective since I'm supposed to be one of the two guys running the project, so I try to stay out of, in terms of my own pictures, I leave that up to the other editors.
Yeah, well, that would be a little difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
For a lot of your stuff to be in there, and they could say,
and then
leave
out other people
here.
Yeah, well, listen, four Pulitzer Prize winners didn't get anything, and you're looking at the picture right there. Of those, where they have 8 or 9 Pulitzer Prize winners,
yes.
4 of them didn't get anything in the book. And most of these people are good friends of mine and my partner David Cohen. You know, the photographers are kind of a funny international family. And when you spend 11 months every year by yourself alone in hotel rooms in one corner of the world or another, your family becomes the other photographers that you meet on the road. So these Day in the Life projects have kind of become an annual gathering for some of the world's best photographers, but it's also a chance to sort of, I mean, it gets pretty lonely out there. It sounds very exotic. Wow, you know, you work for Time or Newsweek and you get to fly around the world, and it is a lot of fun, and it's exciting. But I think you get to a point where every relationship you have with another human being is a two-week relationship, whether it's a friendship or whatever, and then you're off to the next assignment. So the only people you have any continuity with are the other photographers.
Are you indeed making this an annual event?
Well, it's turned out that way for the last 5 years. I keep saying each book is the last one. And then someone comes along with an interesting offer. We have just come back from Moscow about 10 days ago. And it's the only place I can think of right now where, you know, what do you follow this up with? I mean, the America book appears to be the most successful of all the books we've done. I mean, the bookstores have been telling us that it's going out of stock as fast as they can put it in, which is, we just heard this morning it's going to be number 9 on the New York Times bestseller list. Which for a $40 picture book is astounding.
But the Soviet Union, boy, that's a tough one.
Ooh, yeah, but it's the most challenging. I mean, if they'd let us do it.
They'd let you do it?
Can you imagine how much interest there would be in it?
Photographers are treated with suspicion there as it is, and there are areas that are off limits.
They also tend to see the press in general and photographers as public relations. I mean, they wouldn't let you in unless they thought you were there to promote or somehow support the Soviet Union. And when we were there, we said, look, we're going to do the exact same thing here, if you allow us to, that we did in the United States, which is that we're going to show that there are good and bad things about the Soviet Union. Because otherwise, why bother?